Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and once again, welcome to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Today on the program, we're visiting with Jeff Skipper, an international change leadership consultant for organizations in energy, finance, technology, and other industries. For over 25 years, beginning with a 12-year career at IBM, he has guided change projects by focusing on the people side of change. As CEO, he grew a transformation services company to seven figures. In just 5 years, he and his family live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And his new book is Dancing with Disruption, Leading Dramatic Change During Global Transformation. And Mr. Skipper, thanks for joining us here today.
So happy to be with you here, Eric. I'm excited.
You bet. Awesome to have you with us. Looking forward to hearing from you today as well. So for starters, if you would, what is the most critical intervention during transformational change? Let's start there.
You know, I was just working with an organization that's looking to do something really big. And I was talking to the VPs around where they see some of the soft spots in their approach. Number one, not getting out of the office enough. So visibility is really key. And leaders often make the assumption that if we communicate it, and that is important, has to be done very well, that's enough. But reality is our employees want to be able to see us, to look us in the eye, to have a conversation. And not only is that important for validating that they get it, know where we're going, but it's extremely valuable to leaders when they hear firsthand how people are reacting to the change, what they think, and why maybe they're not completely bought in, so that they can adjust and make sure that they're bringing people in the right direction.
The perfect place to start things off here today. Thanks for that. Now, tell me, what do leaders do when they have to go back on their commitments? For instance, the scope changes, the date changes, or they have to abandon the change. Get into some of the ideas and the approach in those regards.
Yeah, and it's, in fact, I would say I've never been on a project where that didn't occur. Some change to the scope or some change to the timeline is extremely common. So we come back to this issue of communication. And it, again, common response is, let's not tell people stuff until we're really sure. We have to shift the objective in some way. And that's actually the opposite of what leaders should do. So from the outset, there needs to be a cadence of communication. So whatever it is, we say every Tuesday, there will be an update of some sort, or we'll be live on the call with the project sponsor or leader, and they'll give us an update. Now, whether that's weekly, biweekly, monthly, whatever suits the project. But telling people in advance, hey, we're seeing some risks, or we're getting some, or we're facing some barriers in these areas, and you know, some of the things we had planned are now looking a bit iffy or sketchy, and we're not sure. That gives people the heads up. The last thing folks want is a surprise and feel like they weren't kept in the loop. And that can be a difficult choice for leaders to make. How much do we tell people? Sometimes because of confidentiality issues, they can't. But my counsel is always the same. Wherever possible, keep people posted. Be transparent, because it fosters a sense of predictability. I know what my future is going to be. And that reduces stress. When all of a sudden it feels like the rug was pulled out or something changed dramatically we weren't expecting, the world feels chaotic, out of control, stress goes up, and guess what? I'm more likely to resist change, or I'm no longer on board. I may start to resist.
And speaking of resist, tell me, why do people perceive change to be so hard to begin with?
One of the big reasons I feel is what people see in the media. So I've been clipping headlines that say things like, change is hard. People oppose to change. People don't like change. I was in a meeting last week with a client, and same thing. I had a leader say, now reality is people don't like change. And I'm like, oh, cringe. So the reality is we love it. We really do. If you look at how your brain works, folks are very aware of the fight versus flight response. First of all, why does that happen? Because we're tuned to notice anything that's changing in the environment so we can react. But we also have to recognize that fight and flight are not the only two options. There's also flourish. How many people, when they see a change that they believe is positive, go there, take advantage of it, take time out of their day to go check it out? So it's not just fight or flight. We often gravitate towards change because we see it's potentially beneficial for us. So it's not that change is hard, but we're often told that it is, and we tend to believe that, that it's going to be difficult or painful. So here again, when we come back to that core concept of communicating well, making the benefits very clear to individuals, recognizing that not all benefits appear to every person. It often has to be tailored to the individual, but letting them know, yeah, there's something good at the end of this journey, and you're not going to go it alone. We're going to support you through that. Here's what you can expect to ensure you're going to be successful.
Now, companies roll out changes from time to time. So what do leaders commonly get wrong when they do roll out a change?
Oh, sorry, I'd say there's so many. We observe so many missteps. I've already commented on visibility, just not being visible enough. But there's also a failure to look broadly and understand that people aren't just facing one thing. So if I'm leading the change, I roll it out, I can be biased to assume everyone's tuned into that, and my change is the most important thing they're facing. So, you know, everyone get on board. But the reality is there's always multiple parallel changes going on in an organization, and we have to look at the bigger picture and understand change fatigue is becoming a real issue for employees within organizations. The other part of that that leaders often don't recognize is that there is no split between, we talk about this home versus work or life versus work balance. We can't draw those delineations. Pandemic made this really apparent. We saw people tuning in for meetings from, you know, the living room or at the kitchen table or even in their bedroom. And so we knocked down very violently the walls between work and home. And that's a good metaphor for the reality in our minds. When we come to work, we carry with us all of the issues that are bothering us. So let me give you an example of a solution to how important this is. There's a company in the UK, they have a number of retail shops. And as part of that, they hired a director of happiness. And that individual relayed in an article that she spends about half of her time helping individuals renegotiate mortgages, loans, cell phone contracts, all because people bring these worries, these issues to the workplace, and to the extent they're distracted by their finances, how are they going to pay the next payment on their mortgage? It means lower performance. So we've got the changes that we're rolling out, we've got multiple parallel changes in the organization, and we've got the issues that employees bring to the table, all lending themselves to change fatigue and burnout, making it hard for people to perform. Leaders need to be empathetic to that and offer a full suite of supports to people to ensure they can be successful.
Really some super feedback on that question. What do leaders commonly get wrong when rolling out a change? Thanks for the thorough coverage there and your visit with us here today. We're visiting with Jeff Skipper, an international change leadership consultant for organizations in energy, finance, technology, and other industries. His new book is Dancing with Disruption, Leading Dramatic Change During Global Transformation, and he's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, next question, what do you do with people who just won't buy into the change?
That's such a hot topic right now. And of course, the key word in there is resistance. So first thing to recognize is that resistance is a continuum. It's not just your resistor. We got to look at the whole continuum. So on one end, we have people that cannot embrace the change. They look like they're not doing anything, they're not getting on board, but they're missing something. Could be training, could be access to a tool or information they need to do something different you want them to do. There's something absent, so they just can't move forward. And that's a great reason to, quote, resist. Then we have people on the other end of the scale that will not comply. They dig their heels in. Most organizations have people like this, and we need to identify them early and help them, coach them to change their mind. Because if we allow them to resist and sow seeds of dissent within the organization, other people just jump on that and start to back away. In the middle, we have a very important component, which is fear. So at one end, people who can't, at the other end, people who won't. In the middle, folks who are just afraid. And the number one fear during change is that I'm going to try and fail and others will see it and I'll be ashamed. So providing those supports, letting people know that, hey, you've got a buddy that's going to walk through this change with you, ensuring they have all the training they require, whatever else is going to help quell that fear is very critical. So when helping leaders lead change, I have them identify early, what do you think could cause a person to feel afraid of this change or dig in their heels and resist? And let's proactively start to tune the messaging so folks know, hey, there is risk, there may be pain along the way, but we're here to help you through that to make sure you are successful.
Also, what is the wrong way to deal with resistance when that does happen because of a change?
Yeah, I was speaking to a group of leaders, and one of them said, you know, we had one of these resistors in the organization. So we had a meeting, we brought everyone together, and basically I called them out on the carpet. I said, oh, so you use public shaming to try and get compliance? He said, yeah, I guess we did. So please don't do that. Helping people through that are really not on board. It is a one-on-one game. We need to do coaching. We need to ask them what's really up here. What do they think is in the way? What's it going to take to get them on board? And often they will tell you. I was working with an organization where we were implementing something that we thought was quite simple and straightforward. And then we started hearing all this noise, people pushing back and complaining. This is going to be a terrible implementation. In fact, the quote was, this is the dumbest thing you could do for us. So, okay, that's clear resistance. So we started asking questions. We went out, we were visible, we talked to people directly, and they told us, Jeff, when you make this change, a simple task I had to do today, and they laid it out for me, now is going to take me five times as long because you've implemented this new technology where instead of giving me one thing, I now have to go look up five things to validate an invoice. And so we realized, oh my goodness, this change is going to benefit us in terms of simplifying some things, but there's a whole bunch of pain we're impacting on this other group. And as a result of that feedback, we said, we heard you. We're going to consider this. And the executive looked at it and then came back and said, you know what? Reality is we're actually going to go ahead with the change. And I'm like, really? But what they promised was we're going to make some changes to what we're implementing. So there's that shift in scope to reduce the pain and make it as easy as possible for you. It was still going to cause them some extra work. But the main thing for me was they acknowledged, we heard you. And often that's one of the critical factors in flipping resistance is giving people a voice, even if it doesn't mean we can satisfy what they're asking, ensuring they know they've been heard. And when we went live with that change, there was zero pushback on that. So yes, it created some pain. We made some adjustments. We made sure people knew they were heard and they felt a sense of control over what was about to happen. And that resulted in really positive adoption.
Yeah, a couple more questions before we conclude here today, kind of shifting gears a little bit here. Why did global leaders fail to get compliance across the board during the pandemic?
The number one reason is that there was almost zero alignment. I mean, you could say, yeah, in general, people wanted to prevent deaths, and you had these, you know, the three elements of keep 6 feet apart, wear a mask, sanitize, you know, every second of the day. However, beyond that, under what conditions, when should that be relieved, how deadly was the virus, you didn't have consistency. And as soon as people see that leaders or people who are supposed to have credibility are not agreeing on some of the basic facts, they hesitate. It doesn't mean that they won't comply necessarily, but they'll hesitate, they'll delay, they'll start listening to other points of view and try to figure out who's right. So the biggest barrier was this lack of consistency and the inability to know who can you trust. You had people that had high credibility, often with very different perspectives, or even an individual that was highly respected changing their story as the pandemic progressed. Of course, that was because we were learning more about what was going to be effective in defeating the virus and keeping people safe. But it just added to the sense of lack of credibility. I'm not sure who I can trust, and therefore I hesitate. And in some cases, I'm going to stop complying. I just don't know what's true anymore.
Jeff, really do appreciate what you do. And of course, we can't get enough information and insight per your expertise in change leadership. And again, we really appreciate all the insight shared here today. One last question as we do wrap things up. Tell me, why isn't training enough to help people prepare for a change?
So I was equated to learning to drive a car. So you can learn to drive a car and you can pass the test, but in a situation where there's new dynamics around you, I remember when I went to Costa Rica and just trying to navigate one of the traffic circles, it's totally different moving out of the classroom into the real world and trying to apply those skills, and you're going to make mistakes. So consider the difference between I took the course, I went out, I made a mistake. One person's reaction would be, wow, that was so traumatic, I'm never doing that again. And we see this happen in organizations as well. But for another who gets out on the road and has someone in the passenger seat who's there to help them and say, whoa, whoa, you missed something there. Make sure you turn on the turn signal so people know what you're doing. Or a brake quickly because, you know, there's a slick surface coming up, makes a huge difference in my confidence and again, my ability to be successful. I'm creating wins for people that then become reinforcing and motivates them to say, okay, I'm learning, I'm making mistakes, but they're recoverable. I've got someone to help me and I know I'm going to continue progressing and getting better. So training is good as a start, it's foundational, but then we need leadership to follow up and really help people be successful as they apply those skills.
Well, it certainly all makes sense and a great place to conclude our session of Enterprise Radio here today. If listeners wanted to tap into your consulting services or to pick up the book, Dancing with Disruption, where's the best place to do so?
At my website, I have a ton of free resources. That's jeffskipperconsulting.com. It's got information on the book, of course, as well, but lots of goodness. I often get people coming in just to pull down resources that they find useful. So by all means, please make use of that.
And of course, listeners, you can find this link within the show notes of this broadcast for your convenience. Again, it is jeffskipperconsulting.com. Mr. Skipper, thanks so much for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks so much, Eric. My pleasure.
Again, we've been speaking with Mr. Jeff Skipper, an international change leadership consultant for organizations in energy, finance, technology, and other industries. His new book is Dancing with Disruption, Leading Dramatic Change During Global Transformation. And again, for all the details, visit jeffskipperconsulting.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com. This is the ePodcast Network.